A short silence. Violet? Yes, I frowned. Did you mean to call someone else? I'm calling Miller. Isn't this his phone? What? No. I examined the phone I held and realized she was right. Sorry, I was half asleep. Is he there? He is, I said tightly. Sleeping. If it shocked or upset Evelyn to know Miller and I were in bed together, she didn't show it. Okay, don't wake him. Just pass on the message that I'm ready to go whenever he is. Oh, and tell him thanks again. Ciao. The phone went quiet, and I stared at it for a few minutes. The screen reverted back to its locked position, but a text notification was there. The start of the message visible. From Evelyn, sent last night. You did it, baby! XOXOXOXO. I set the phone on the nightstand and lay on my back. Ready to go? Where? Miller slept for another few minutes, then slowly came awake. He glanced around, confused, sleep still clinging to him, and his gaze landed on me. The smile that came over him to see me was so beautiful and soft, and short-lived.
What is it? Was last night... was it too much?
Last night was perfect. He looked almost shy.
I thought so too. But what's wrong?
Evelyn called you, I said, sitting up against the headboard and tucking the sheet around me. I answered your phone by mistake. She said to tell you she's ready to go whenever you are. Miller's head fell back and he rolled his eyes at the ceiling.
God damn her.
What is she talking about? He sat up beside me, covering himself to the waist, and ran a hand through his tousled hair.
She's talking about Los Angeles. I promised her that if I signed a contract, I'd take her with me to record the album, as my personal assistant.
My skin went cold all over, while my cheeks burned as if I'd been slapped. Why would you do that? Do you need a personal assistant?
I don't need anything, he said. It's for her, to get her foot in the door, to make her own connections, and then she's gone. I wouldn't have even entertained the idea, except she needs help. I can't tell you more. I promised her I wouldn't.
He bit off a curse.
I know how it looks.
How does it look, Miller? I asked, my voice breaking. Are you going to be living with her?
No, I don't know where I'm going to live, but no. There's nothing between us, I swear. And yes, I can hear myself. I sound like a fucking jackass. I was going to tell you first and explain everything.
Why didn't you tell me before you left? How long have you and she been planning this?
Nothing's planned. She made me promise before I left, literally on the way to the airport. It sounded crazy and impossible, but then again, so did getting a record deal in the first place.
I shook my head and climbed out of bed, feeling more naked than I was. I quickly pulled on a t-shirt and my shorts.
Talk to me, Vi, Miller said.
He cleared his throat.
I thought you trusted me.
I don't trust her. She plays the long game, Miller. It took her the entire school year to get back at me for being homecoming queen, but she did it, and somehow arranged for you to be prom king. He made a face, then snorted.
No way. That's fucking ridiculous.
It's true. You didn't see it. Her, taking ownership of you in front of the entire school, in front of me. It was humiliating, but more than that, it just hurt. Miller rummaged on the floor for his underwear, pulled them on, and then came to me.
I'm sorry, Vi. I don't know what she's doing except that I wouldn't have a contract if not for her. And right this second, I fucking need it. They gave me money, in advance. I can give it to my mom and get rid of Chet.
He tentatively held both my shoulders.
I swear, I belong to you. And I know how it feels like a slap in the face. I can see it in your eyes. And I...
He bit off his words, frustration and pain suffusing him. He swallowed hard.
I'm in love with you. Nothing can ever change that.
She's going to try, I said in a small voice.
And fail. She's going to fail because I won't even let her try.
Jealousy and self-doubt rampaged in me. But I knew Miller. Once he'd made a promise, he kept it. He promised to help Evelyn, and I couldn't ask him not to keep it.
I have to trust you, I said, or we have nothing. Miller pulled me into him, wrapping me in his strong embrace. His voice rumbled in my ear that was pressed to his warm, bare chest.
You can trust me. I'm doing her a favor, that's all. You'll be an hour away. I'll visit you, or you can visit me this summer before your classes start. And the very fucking second the album's done, I'll come back.
I won't be here. His arms around me stiffened.
What? Why?
My parents are divorcing and selling the house. There's no money for UCSC, so I'm going to Texas. Baylor's going to pay my tuition.
Texas,
he said, letting me go and slumping to sit on the edge of the bed.
Jesus, when did this happen?
I found out yesterday. They're broke. There's nothing left. He shook his head, eyes on the ground.
I'm sorry, Vi. And UCSC, I know that was your dream.
I sat on the bed next to him. What are we going to do?
I don't know. Goldline is going to make an EP, and if the timing works out, there's talk of a tour. I join Ed Sheeran as an opening act.
Ed Sheeran? My God, that's huge, I said, wondering how my heart could swell with happiness and break at the same time.
It's not a sure thing, but shit, Vi. I thought that would be the hardest thing to deal with, being apart from you for that long.
His eyes widened at a sudden thought, and he turned to me, taking my hand.
Come with me.
Where? To Los Angeles?
Yes, and if the tour happens, you can come with me then too.
What about my school?
Just for a year. Jack Villegas, the guy at Goldline, he really fucking believes in me, Vi, just like you do. Maybe I'll make enough money to pay for your college. Next year, you can go to UCSC or UCLA. We can make it work.
He was so full of hope after years of mistrust and doubt, but I shook my head. I can't, I said. His face fell, his eyes hardening.
Because of Evelyn?
Not just her, but yes, that's part of it. She'll at least have a job, a purpose. What would I do? Tag along after the two of you? And what about my own plans? Accepting Baylor's offer is going to help my med school applications, because I still have about 10 more years of college ahead of me. I have to stay sharp. I can't take a year off or put it on hold. His gaze hardened, his jaw tight.
Then I can. I can call up Jack and—
Absolutely not, I said. You have to go and make that album, and I have to pursue my goals. You can't pay for them, and I can't abandon them for a year to follow you around. I'd be miserable.
Miserable,
he stated.
You'd be with me.
Tears filled my eyes. Miller.
No, I get it. It's not enough,
he said, and I could hear the words he didn't. I'm not enough. Again. The thought was loud in his eyes, swimming with memories of another time someone left him. Miller, wait, I said, as he began throwing on his clothes. We need to keep talking. Sort this out.
I can't. I gotta go. Mom's dealt with Chet long enough.
He drew on his boots, shouldered his bag, hefted his guitar case. When he was dressed, he stood in front of me, his tone hard.
We'll talk later.
He bent and kissed my head, a short peck, and started to turn. I grabbed his hand and stood up, facing him, and waited until he met my unflinching gaze. Immediately, his steely blue eyes softened. He dropped his bags and case and wrapped his arms around me. Wordlessly, we held each other, at an impasse, our love for each other melding us together while circumstances pulled us apart. After a few moments, he picked up his bags again and left. I sank back down in my bed, where my blood stained the sheets, vivid evidence that last night had happened, though it felt like I'd woken to discover it had all been a dream.
Chapter 24. Miller. It's a highly unusual circumstance for us to cut a check to a new artist on the same day we meet him. Jack Villegas reminded me of Andy Garcia. Tall, sharp, authoritative, but kind. We sat on opposite sides of the polished desk in his office that had a view of the Hollywood sign. His brown eyes went to the abrasion on my cheek and the fingerprints on my neck. I'd tried to keep them covered, but LA was hot, and I'd left Holden's scarf in the hotel. "But your situation is a little bit special, isn't it?" He rose to his feet and paced around the desk. Cufflinks glinted in the Los Angeles sun, and his gray suit probably cost more than 6 months of my rent. "You're a rare talent. A little more angst than Shawn Mendes, a little less than Bon Iver. But you have that intangible quality, that magnetic pull that makes listeners feel connected to you. You have a story to tell, don't you?" He didn't wait for an answer because he already had it. I heard his words before he spoke them, a reverse echo that felt like a dream until he made it real. "That's why we're signing you, Miller. And because we like to consider all of our clients part of the family, you're leaving here with some money." He put his hand on my shoulder, like a father might to his son. "We take care of our own." On the bus from Violet's neighborhood to mine, I could practically feel the check for $20,000 sitting heavy in my wallet. I felt like a thief and imagined the police surrounding the bus and pulling it over, hauling me out and arresting me. Jack Villegas would somehow be there, saying it had all been a huge mistake. Stupid shit to be thinking about, but it was better than facing the reality of Violet moving to Texas. I needed to keep my mind occupied. The first order of business that morning was to get rid of Chet and sign over that check to Mom. But Violet saturated my thoughts. Sense memories of sleeping with her for the first time seeped in and pushed out everything else. Even the memory of sitting in a record exec's office as he tells me he's going to give me a brand new life. The bus rolled and jounced, and in my mind, Violet was under me in her bed, beautiful and perfect. I'd loved her for so long, fantasized about that night in 100 different ways. But being naked with her, being inside her, was better than any fevered imagining. She'd created sensations in me a million times more potent than anything I'd ever been able to give myself in all those fruitless years of wanting her. And now, I was losing her. Again, I yanked my thoughts away from her. "One shitstorm at a time, thanks." The bus stopped at Lighthouse Apartments. I got out, but kept walking down to the shack to stow my bag and my guitar. I took my insulin with a meal of an apple, a bag of Fritos, and a bottle of water I'd bought at the airport the night before. Breakfast of champions. When I finished, I pulled out my phone and texted Ronan and Holden. "Let's roll." In front of my apartment door, I sucked in a breath, blew it out on a shaky exhale, then cracked my neck from side to side, like a fighter getting ready for a match. Holden stood pressed against the wall on the left, Ronan on the right. He gave me a nod, his eyes flat and emotionless, but I felt the power emanating off of him like a low heat. Holden was dressed as impeccably as ever, although his clothes looked rumpled and slept in. His eyes were red-rimmed and swollen, and he stunk of stale alcohol and bonfire smoke. As if he'd passed out on some beach last night. "You up to this?" I whispered. He shot me a tired wink. "Forward my mail, tell my story. I'm not coming back." Despite the pit of fear gnawing a hole in my stomach, I snorted a laugh, then sucked in another breath. I knocked on the door to my own apartment. It opened a crack, and Mom peered out. Her eyes widened for a moment with joy, and then shut down again with fear. Miller, you're back. Is he here? Yeah, he's... The door pulled open all the way, and Chet filled the space. Go lie down, Lynn. I'll handle this. Mom looked at me uncertainly. I gave her a nearly imperceptible nod, hoping she would do as he said and take shelter from the storm that was coming. She hesitated, then retreated into the darkness of the apartment. It took everything I had not to glance at Ronan and Holden, standing like sentries on either side of the doorframe. You need to get out of my house. You don't live here anymore, son. You're a grown man now and can't be leeching off your mom. Now go on. He started to shut the door, and I blocked it with my boot. At the same time, Ronan swung around from the wall, throwing the door all the way open with a bang. He strode into the house, gripping Chet by the collar of his shirt and driving him backwards as he went. Chet gave a shout of surprise, stumbled, and fell on his ass. Who the fuck are you? You can't be in here. Ronan stood over him, still and hard as stone, hands balled into fists, his eyes like a snake's before it struck. We're your unwelcome wagon, Holden said, leaning casually against the door, examining his nails. As in, you are no longer welcome here, fuck nugget. Chet's panicked glance went between them as he scrambled to his feet. Get the hell out of my house. You good? I asked Ronan. I got this. His gaze hadn't moved from Chet for a second. I went to go around them in the small space. Where do you think you're going? Chet's hand shot out to grab me, and Ronan was there. Like a statue come to life, his fist shot out, connecting square with Chet's flabby cheek. Chet snarled, cursed, and flew at Ronan, tackling him to the ground. The two became a tangle of arms and legs, grappling and grasping, cursing and grunting. We're good, Holden waved his hand. He'll tag in if he needs me. I nodded and hurried down the short hall, nearly crashing into Mom. Miller, don't do this, please. Do you love him? No, she said in a small voice. Then, louder, no. Good. I went past her into their bedroom as the sounds of our coffee table being demolished came from the living room. This his bag? Mom nodded at the dirty red duffel bag in my hand. I handed it to her. Pack up his stuff, I said, and went back to the living room. Ronan had Chet pinned to the floor face down, one knee in between Chet's shoulder blades, the other on his elbow. He had a fistful of greasy hair and was pressing his face sideways to the floor. I'll fucking kill you, Chet seethed, his face smashed, spittle flying. How are we doing out here? I asked. Well, it was touch and go for a second, Holden observed from the door, dabbing a handkerchief to his bleeding lip. Chester here had Ronan pinned, which caused me to heroically jump into the fray and take an elbow to the mouth. My mistake. Ronan was going easy on him to prolong the violence. You know our boy. He needs to get it out of his system every now and again. I shook my head at Ronan, who shrugged one shoulder. Mom emerged from the back bedroom with a duffel bag full of Chet's stuff. I took it from her and joined Ronan in the center of our smashed living room. Let him up. Ronan released Chet, his eyes never leaving him, clearly ready, maybe hoping, for more of a fight. I shoved Chet's bag into his arms. I'll say it one more time. Get the fuck out of my house. He hesitated for a second, which was 1 second too long for Ronan. He grabbed Chet by the front of his shirt with both hands and drove him toward the door. Holden opened it smoothly. Thank you for choosing Ronan Air for all your travel needs. Please watch your step as you exit, as you could be in for a rough landing. Jesus, Ronan is going to kill him. But instead of throwing Chet down the cement stairs, as I feared, Ronan gripped him by the shirt collar and tipped him backwards over the balcony. Chet's arms pinwheeled.
Are you fucking crazy?
I live less than a block away from here, Ronan said. I'll be watching you. If you step foot anywhere near this place again, I will end you. Do you hear me? I will fucking end you.
Slowly, he released him, their eyes never breaking contact as the older man jerked his shirt back into place. He shot me a pained look.
You needed a man in the house. I did my best. That's all.
Your best was sorely lacking, Chester, Holden observed. Chet's lip curled, but he didn't have any more fight in him. He took the stairs down, muttering and cursing impotently. Ronan stepped back into the apartment. Holden shut the door. A short silence passed, the four of us absorbing what had just happened. Then Holden clapped his hands together. Who could go for some pancakes right about now? I shook my head, affection and gratitude for both my friends flooding me, calming the adrenaline rush.
Can you guys give me a minute? Meet me at the shack.
Ronan nodded and looked to my mom.
Ma'am?
Holden tipped an imaginary cap.
Good day, madam.
When they were gone, I went with Mom to the couch, stepping over the ruined remains of our coffee table. She stared at the mess fearfully, not fully grasping yet that she was free.
Mom,
I said,
look at me.
Gold Line Records gave me a contract. They want me. I don't know how or why. My throat was suddenly choked with emotion that was finally bubbling to the surface. Elation, fear, all of it. I swallowed hard, tears stinging my eyes.
Things are going to be different now, okay? Oh, baby, she said, her brown eyes filling too. I'm so proud of you. I know I haven't been here for you the way I should.
It's okay. I can take care of myself. And I'm going to take care of you.
But you're right. You haven't been here. You haven't been you. I need you to come back, okay? I need you.
I couldn't stop it. I tried to hold my breath. But the sobs came bursting out of me. Mom put her arms around me and hugged me and held me like she used to when I was a kid, before Dad left and her every waking hour had been about survival.
You're right,
she said, holding me close, stroking my hair.
I'm sorry. It just got too hard, losing our house in Los Banos. The car, you being sick. I felt like anything could be taken away at any second, including you.
I raised my head, shocked to hear my own familiar thoughts repeated back to me.
I felt it too. But we can't live that way. We have to keep going.
I have to somehow keep going without Violet. I wiped my tears on the sleeve of my shirt.
I'm going to LA, and I want you to come with me. I'll get you set up in a new place, a better place than this, okay?
That sounds good, baby. Real good.
For the first time in a long time, there was a light in her eyes and a little bit of color to her skin where there had only been gray. It happened all at once. 2 weeks after we threw Chet out on his ass, we all graduated from SC Central. Ronan by the skin of his teeth, Holden with honors thanks to his IQ, and not because he ever studied a day in his life. Violet was class valedictorian. Her parents sold their house, and the next day, she was going to drive her SUV packed with stuff to Texas. That same day, I was getting on a plane to Los Angeles with Evelyn. She'd wanted to ride with me to the airport, but I insisted on meeting her there. I had to say my goodbyes. Ronan, Holden, Violet, and Shiloh all gathered at the shack. The afternoon was overcast and gray, reflecting our collective mood. Holden was uncharacteristically subdued and quiet, hardly saying a word. After I heard everything that had happened to him on prom night, I worried about him the most. Violet sat in the sand in front of me in our customary position, her back to my chest, my arms wrapped around her. We'd spent the last few days either at her house so I could help her pack, or mine so she could help me. Not that I had much. Nights were spent in her bed, her taking me inside her wordlessly, sometimes desperately, kissing and touching and grasping, as if trying to take a piece of the other with us, as the days grew closer to this one. The sun began to set over the ocean, and it was time to go. Shiloh gave me a hug and a kiss first. "Be safe. Do good." Holden gave me a hug that was saturated in expensive vodka. "If you ever need anything, and I hear that you didn't ask me first, I will personally hunt you down and kill you." I smiled and hugged him back. "I don't need anything but for you to take care of yourself, okay?" "Me?" he scoffed. "I'm a paragon of good life choices." "My ass." And then I hugged him again. A sudden fear that I'd never see him again washing over me. "I mean it. Take care." "Careful, Stratton, or I'll have to assume you're in love with me." But I was, in a way. Him and Ronan both. Leaving them was nearly as hard as leaving Violet. Ronan clasped my hand and pulled me in until our elbows touched. "I'll watch your mom's place until you get set up down there." "Thanks, man. Shouldn't be long."
"However long it takes."
My damn heart ached, and I was perilously close to tears. I had to say something ridiculous. Stat. "Promise me, Ronan. Promise to write me every day." Ronan barked a laugh.
"Get the fuck out of here."
He gave me a shove, though I didn't miss the almost smile my dumb joke got out of him. Violet drove me to the airport, up the winding 14 highway, through the forest that led out of Santa Cruz. Before she got to the highway that would take us to the airport terminals in San Jose, she abruptly pulled her SUV into a restaurant parking lot.
"Vi?
The police at the airport won't let me stay and hug you and kiss you as much as I need to, so I have to say goodbye here." She flipped her hand at the restaurant sign. "In a Denny's parking lot, for God's sake. And I don't want to say goodbye at all." I reached over and pulled her to me and held her for the longest time, stroking her hair, inhaling her scent, memorizing how she felt in my arms, how good it felt to be held by her. For the millionth time, the words to beg her to come with me rose to my lips, but I couldn't hear no again. And she'd be right. She was going to be a brilliant doctor and had a long road of medical school before she could even begin a career. Mine was taking off like a shotgun,
Hers was a long runway. I couldn't stand in her way. Even so, it gnawed at my guts that she wouldn't come with me. Wasn't logical, wasn't fair. I had to be one of the luckiest bastards alive to have a record deal right out of the gate. And yet, in that moment, I was so close to throwing it all away and going with her to Texas. As I held her and kissed her, a different future rolled out in front of me. We'd get a place together. I'd get a job while she went to class. Hell, I'd get 2 jobs to help support her so she wouldn't have to work at all. She could concentrate on being a student and then come home and fall into bed with me. Long, lazy Sundays in the Texas heat, sweating between the sheets. I'd make her come so hard, her cries would fill the space of our place that was just hers and mine. I could play small clubs on the weekends and build my career piece by piece instead of being slingshot into the stratosphere. I never wanted fame. I wanted my mom in a safe place, not one crawling with roaches and no AC. I wanted a little piece of security. And I wanted Violet. Part of me felt like the universe was playing a tremendous prank on me, dumping riches in my lap while taking away my greatest treasure. I kissed her and tasted her salty tears. "Miller," she said brokenly, her hand in my hair, our foreheads pressed together. "It feels like the other half of my heart is being ripped away." "I'll call you every day," I said. "We'll visit as much as we can, okay? Weekends, vacations, holidays." The words sounded hollow and inadequate, even in my own ears. I wanted her all the time, every minute, in my arms, in my bed, in my life. The twinge of bitterness in my stomach grew and expanded, and I worried how big it would be a month from now, or 3, or 6. "Okay," she said, though I could read the doubt in her eyes too. The pain of enduring a long-distance relationship when we had only just begun to explore what we were to each other. We kissed, and she cried, until I was in danger of missing my flight. But Violet would never let that happen. She pulled herself together and took me to the airport. At the curb, I held her close one last time. "Call me when you get there." "I will." I kissed her a final time, pouring myself into it, into her, trying desperately to seal a pact, the hope that we could make it. Then the police officer was asking us to move it along. I let her go, and she made her way back to her car. "Violet," I called, my voice rough. "You're going to be an incredible doctor someday." She stopped, alarmed. Fresh tears came to her eyes at the strange tone in my voice and finality in my choice of words. I hardly understood them myself. "I'll see you soon," she said firmly, as if trying to patch a hole I'd torn in our hope. She quickly got in her car and drove away. I waited, watching her go, until the white SUV was lost in a sea of other cars, until finally, I couldn't see her anymore.
Part 4. November. It's been a while since I've written in this old thing, but desperate times and all. Okay, I'm not actually desperate, just lonely. Desperately lonely. Miller finished his EP, and of course it shot straight to the top of every chart. Before he knew what was happening, they whisked him away on tour to open for Ed Sheeran. I saw the show in Austin 2 nights ago, and I still get goosebumps thinking about it. Miller was just
I have no words. To see him on a real stage with a band behind him and thousands of fans was extraordinary. They were Ed's fans, but by the end of the first song, they were Miller's too. I must have looked like the crazed, obsessed groupie in the front row, crying her eyes out before he even sang a note. It was magic. It was where he belonged. We hung out backstage with Ed Sheeran. He's lovely. And then we went to the hotel. I'm not going to lie, the sex was amazing. With Miller, not Ed Sheeran. Winky face. Miller was electric and humming, and I could feel the energy still pulsing in him. He carried that sweaty, sexy aura he had on stage, pouring his heart out to the crowd right into bed, pouring himself into me. That was a kind of magic, too. But the next morning, he had to get on the bus to Dallas, and I had to go back to Waco. We don't know when we'll see each other again. He'll be on tour with Ed for at least 6 months, and then the label wants him back in the studio. I'm trying to stay positive, but I miss him so much. He calls as often as he can, but it's hard. And as hard as we knew it was going to be, it's so much harder than that. May. Another plan made, another cancellation. This is the fifth time Miller and I have tried to carve out a little piece of time only to have the plans fall through due to his crazy schedule. Not that I'm counting or anything. Okay, so I totally am. Since we left Santa Cruz, Miller and I have spent a grand total of 13 days together, scattered over 11 months. He finished the tour with Ed Sheeran, and I thought he'd have a little time off between it and recording his full-length album. But there are music videos to shoot and publicity events, and if the album sells well, headlining his own tour will come next. I'm really trying not to be the clingy, needy girlfriend waiting for her man by the phone. Not that Miller makes me feel that way. He never misses our nightly call unless he's on a plane. His schedule is grueling, but then so is mine. Last January, I couldn't be with him as he accepted his Best New Artist Grammy because I had a massive research paper due. I watched it on TV. He took his mom as his date, and in his speech, he thanked me. Not by name. We avoid that to keep from paparazzi showing up on my doorstep. He called me the girl in his love songs. I cried so hard my roommate Veronica thought I was having a stroke. Tears for missing him, tears for loving him so much that every second we were apart was starting to feel like we were going against the natural order of the universe. Veronica comforted me with a quote she likes. Change is hard in the beginning, messy in the middle, and beautiful at the end. I don't know if this is the beginning or the middle. It's hard and messy. It's long stretches of not seeing each other punctuated by a stolen weekend here and there that ends with another heartbreaking goodbye. I can only hope she's right, that all this heartache is worth it, and that it'll be beautiful in the end. October. I haven't written much in here lately. I've been too busy. My studies get harder with every passing semester. But being that busy helps keep me occupied, so I don't spend every waking hours missing Miller. Of course, that's not true. I miss him always. Every minute is colored slightly by not having him. I probably sound dramatic writing stuff like that, but this is my outlet. Miller's is his music. As everyone predicted, his first full-length album, Out of Reach, went triple platinum. It's beautiful, and I can hear us in it, our distance and our hard goodbyes. He's in Europe now, headlining his own world tour. The last time I saw him was a month ago. The label set him free for an entire weekend before kickoff. We hid away in a cabin in Lake Tahoe to avoid the press, desperate to make the most of those 48 hours. He looked so tired, exhausted. He loves his fans and playing live, but the rest of it is overwhelming. I told him he was allowed to enjoy his success and take care of himself better, but he's determined to do this tour. He's negotiated that half of its profits will go to a charity that feeds the homeless and helps find them housing. I do this, and it all makes sense, he told me. Then I can look myself in the mirror every morning. I loved him for that. Even more than I thought possible. He asked me to wait for him, and I promised him I would. Of course I did, because I'm the one who has to do the waiting. I can't jet off with him. I have my own work and my own goals to accomplish,
so I can be proud of myself. We kissed and made love, and then he was gone again. And now, there's nothing I can do but wait. Chapter 25. Violet. March.
Violet, order up!
Chef Benito, who everyone called Papa, set two plates of eggs, bacon, and hash browns in the window. He banged on the bell, then disappeared again. I wiped sweat from my brow with the back of my hand, finishing taking a table's order, and hurried to the window to stick the ticket. Two other tables needed coffee refills, but nothing got cold faster than eggs. I'd learned that the hard way when I got hired at Mac's Diner 2 years ago. I grabbed the plates Papa had set out, refilled coffee, dropped a check. When the breakfast rush ended, I had a moment to catch my breath.
Avi?
Dean, another server, sidled up and flashed me one of his trademark charming smiles.
There's an art exhibit opening downtown tonight. Want to check it out?
Can't, I said, marrying two ketchup bottles. Have to study.
How did I know you were going to say that?
Because for 2 years you've been asking me to go out with you, and for 2 years I've said no. He grinned.
Make me sound pathetic, why don't you?
I gave him a tired smile. You know how it is.
I know that all work and no fun is bad for your health.
Dean leaned over the counter and whipped a lock of sandy blonde hair off his brow. He nudged my arm softly, his fingers lingering on my skin.
I worry about you.
Oh, please, I said with a wry laugh, then dropped my glance to where he was touching me and back to him, brows arched. He pulled his hand away and stood straight, grinning.
I don't understand how you can stay immune to my considerable charm. It's not like you have a boyfriend, right?
I winced and busied myself with the ketchup. Right. I gave him a look. Have you ever stopped to consider that maybe I just don't like you? His eyes widened innocently.
Me?
Nah. Papa appeared in the kitchen window.
Violet, order up!
He banged the bell. I gotta get that. Dean heaved a sigh and walked backwards, hands up.
I'm not going to give up on you, V. Someday, I'm going to win you over and you are going to say, why didn't I order the Dean special sooner?
I rolled my eyes at him. He was so full of shit. Most girls were not immune to his considerable charm. He only wanted me because I hadn't fallen into his bed immediately. He had no idea how impossible it was, how even the idea of it couldn't find a handhold in my thoughts. My shift ended, and I went to the back room to take off my apron and unpin the silly cloth cap from my head. Other guys in the back and server starting their shifts greeted me warmly or said goodbye for the day. The crew at Max had become like a second family to me, with grouchy Papa as head of household. It was one of the things I liked best about Texas, the southern mentality of warmth and familiarity that I'd have died of loneliness without. I drove my RAV4, which was getting old and needed some work, through Waco, Texas. Halfway between Dallas and Austin, the town was completely landlocked. Nothing but flat stretches of land as far as the eye could see. It had its own beauty, but I missed the ocean, forests, and mountains of Santa Cruz. The bonfires at the shack were becoming a distant memory, replaced instead by scents of fry food at Max and the recycled air in the Baylor University Library. Growing fainter still were the scents of Miller's skin and cologne, the way his shirt smelled when I wore it after he'd slept in it, the salt of his sweat in bed after he'd brought me from one delirious orgasm to another. Stop torturing yourself, I muttered as I pulled the car into the covered parking of the Desert Dune Apartments. It was a cute complex about a mile from Baylor. Despite my roommate Veronica's urging to make it my own, it had very little of me in it. Her tapestries and bizarre artistic knickknacks filled the cozy two-bedroom, one-bath unit. My contribution had been to bring in a few houseplants for a bit of green, but I never quite felt settled there, like wearing a sweater that was too tight. Inside her apartment, I headed straight for the shower to wash the scent of bacon grease from my hair and skin. Afterward, I dressed in a tank top and sleep pants, my usual Friday night attire. Veronica's bedroom door was open, but she wasn't home. The apartment was thick with silence. I had a report to write up for physics lab, but the couch called to me because suddenly I was so tired. Tired of being sad. Tired of missing him. God, I missed Miller so much, my bones ached. Sometimes, in moments like that, I have the urge to throw it all away, quit school and be with him on tour. But I knew it would wreck us. As hard as it was being apart, it would be harder still for me to do nothing and watch my own goals slip away, city by city, concert by concert. I would lose my sense of self. Miller and I were two halves of the same equation. If I faded away, we wouldn't work anymore. Still, tears filled my eyes to look at the wreckage of my old life. I missed Mom and Dad. I missed my house in Santa Cruz and the family we'd once been in it. I missed Shiloh and River, all of us blasted apart and flung to all corners of the country. As if she'd heard my silent plea, my phone lit up with Shiloh's number. I swallowed my tears. Hey, Shy. What's wrong? I sniffed a laugh. Hello to you too. It's me, Vi, she said. I know you. I'm so glad it's you, I said, curling up on the couch. I miss your voice. Me too, girl. How are things? Though I think I already know. I've been better. I hesitated, then asked anyway. How's Ronan? Same. She bit off the word. And you? How are you, Shy? She exhaled softly into the phone, but when she spoke, her voice was hard again. I'm fine. It's you I'm worried about. I read that Miller is going to be on the next cover of Rolling Stone, and something told me to call. Is he? I said, my heart soaring and cracking at the same time. He didn't tell you? He never tells me stuff like that. He considers it bragging. Lord, that boy, he's the least famous person I know. How are you holding up? Okay. I had to take some time off from the diner to get a huge biochem project completed. Now I have midterms coming up. You should be proud, Shiloh said. You're working your ass off over there. Thank you. I'm sort of proud of me too. Tears filled my eyes. This is hard. Her tone grew soft. I know it is. I sniffed and wiped my eyes, trying to keep it together. But we knew it would be. He's headlining a world tour. He has shows almost every night. There are time zone differences. I heaved a sigh. I'm trying to stay positive. I know. Long-distance relationships suck, and you're over there without even a lifeline from your parents. Has Miller offered to help with your college? I'm sure he... No. My tuition is paid for. I earned that scholarship on my own, and I want to keep earning it. Okay, but how about rent? He sent you money, right? He's making a fortune over there. There's no way he wouldn't help you. He wants to, and if I got in real trouble, he'd help. But I don't want his money. All my life, I've been a pampered rich kid who never had to want for anything. Hell, I never even had a job until Max. Girl, you volunteered for every medical program under the sun. True, but ultimately that helped me get ahead in my career. I never had to earn a living. I think I need this. I can't see the whole thing yet, but I feel like my crappy job, my crazy school workload, and even being apart from Miller are making me a better person. One who understands what it's like to struggle so I can appreciate what I have even more. Like Miller has done his entire life. Well, dang, girl. I guess Snow White has left the building. I laughed. I hope so. I plucked a piece of lint off the couch. Shy, you know you can talk to me, right? Like how I talk to you? A silence. Then, I know. I mean, if it's too much to talk about, I get it. I don't want to make you relive anything over the phone with me, but I just want you to know that I'm here, okay? Okay. She said, her voice breathy with tears. Then she cleared her throat, pulling her own protective walls around her. After all that happened, I couldn't blame her. Shy? I'm okay. I promise. Okay. Call me if that ever changes. Hell, call me anyway. I will. Love you. Love you too. I hung up with her and closed my eyes, allowing myself a rare moment of unscheduled rest, while shedding a few tears for my friend who'd suffered so much, but only for a few minutes. I then sat up, dried my tears, and got back to work.
Chapter 26. Miller. A hard, sharp rapping came at the green room door.
5 minutes, Evelyn called.
Coming,
I called back. I depressed the needle, emptying the little vial of insulin into my thigh. I'd already bolused to handle the carbs I'd eaten at dinner to get through tonight's concert, but my numbers had spiked again.
Fucking hell, I muttered, pulling my pants up.
Other diabetics handled their shit well, but for me, it was a constant battle. I followed plans, I counted carbs until my eyes crossed, and yet my numbers swung high and low no matter how careful I was. A few weeks ago, I'd passed out after a show in Lisbon, so the label assigned a doctor to babysit me for the duration of the tour, and even he was baffled. He wanted to get me in a hospital and run a bunch of tests and check my A1C, which I was long overdue for, but that meant pausing the tour, and that couldn't happen. I put away my insulin kit as the booming screams, stomps, and applause of 20,000 fans in the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas rolled over me like thunder. Then the sound swelled louder, my band taking the stage ahead of me. They were good guys, all of them talented. We could have been close like brothers if I'd let them, but I burned that bridge early on. They all thought I was stuck up and aloof. Fine by me. I'd already had friends who were like brothers, and look how that turned out. Pain tightened my chest for Ronan and Holden, for Violet. I miss her so much. It's making me sick. I gave myself a last glance in the mirror. My reflection glowered back in my usual jeans, t-shirt, and boots, except now the t-shirt cost $190, the jeans $450, and the boots more than I wanted to think about. It's too much. I went from having nothing to having everything, almost overnight. It reminded me of the urban legend that said if you took a person from the North Pole and dropped them in the middle of the equator, they'd die instantly from the sudden change in latitude. I could relate. The machine of the concert they'd built around me, a huge lumbering apparatus that crawled from city to city, breaking down and reforming within days, was overwhelming to a former poor kid like me. I poured my focus into what I loved about music, the creation of a song and letting the harmony bend its way around the lyrics, the energy the fans gave to me and what I gave them. I worked to keep that connection with them, no matter how big the arenas got, because that's what mattered, the music and the listener. All the rest felt like something I hadn't earned. I threw open the green room door. Evelyn was there in her headset with a clipboard in her hand. A badge hung from a lanyard around her neck and marked her as one of the 200 or so other people who are making this tour happen. I strode down the corridor, Evelyn's thigh-high black boots clacking along beside me. She wore a short black mini skirt and a fitted blazer that showed her cleavage. She looked more like an executive at a fashion magazine than a personal assistant.
"Do you have my phone?"
I demanded. She flinched at my harsh tone, then gave me a stern look.
"You left it in the hotel, again."
She handed it to me, and I scrolled through. A text had come in from Violet earlier.
"Miss you. Love you. Have a great show tonight. XOXO.
My heart ached.
"God, Vi."
She was still there, waiting for me.
Even after months of separation, she was still on the other end of the line, even when she had only 2 minutes of me before I was pulled away again. The story of our life. I bit off a curse and handed my phone back to Evelyn. After the show tonight, I don't want anyone in the green room. No one. I don't care if fucking Elvis comes back from the dead. I need an hour alone. Evelyn rolled her eyes. Your nightly call with Vi. I know the drill. It's the only thing that keeps me sane. And here I thought that was my job. She cocked her head. Have you told her?
Told her what?
About Lisbon. About how Dr. Brighton thinks you should quit the tour immediately.
Why would I do that? It would only worry her, and I can't quit the tour. Not yet.
I'm worried about you, she said, as we resumed walking down the tunnel. Not just because of what happened in Lisbon. You seemed a little bit out of it in San Diego. In fact, you frequently seem out of it. The tabloids think you're on drugs or a raging alcoholic.
The tabloids can write whatever they want. I'm fucking tired, Evelyn, I said, striding toward the stage, where the noise of the crowd was growing louder and louder, reverberating all around me. We've done 55 shows in 6 months. Cut me some goddamn slack.
Guilt for snapping at her yanked me to a stop. I looked up at the ceiling, my hands on my hips. She didn't deserve my acid mood.
I'm sorry.
She studied me, brown eyes softening. Has Dr. Brighton checked on you recently?
Only every other minute. I'm fine.
You don't look fine. I think he's right. You need to take a break, Miller. Run the tests he wants you to run.
Can't. I have to push through.
Even if it kills you? She grabbed my arm and forced me to look at her. I love this. Touring, video shoots, the crowds and the paparazzi, all of it. But you don't. So why are you pushing yourself when it's making you sick?
You know why, Ev.
That charity?
Yes, that charity. Helping hands is going to save my ass.
Save you? You're the one giving them half of your take of the tour.
She didn't get it.
I'd been a kid who'd lived in a station wagon and plucked at a guitar, and now I was a guy headlining a sold-out global arena tour. The charity was my insurance, so that guy wouldn't forget that kid, so I could keep hold of who I was and where I'd come from when everyone else I cared about was so far away.
We only have one more leg left, I told Evelyn. We get through that and Helping Hands International gets a very large check. Then I can feel like all this,
I waved my arms to encompass the arena, is earned.
And be the kind of man who deserves a woman like Violet.
Only one more leg of the tour is 23 more cities across the U.S., Evelyn said. I worry about you, Miller. You leave so much on stage, night after night.
Because the fans deserve it. If they're going to throw this much goddamn money at me, then I'd better give my best. Every night, every show, my absolute best.
Evelyn started to argue, but Simon, the equipment manager, came up and looped an electric guitar around my neck.
Just be careful, Evelyn said in a tone I didn't like, soft and full of concern.
2 years ago, she'd been a brassy, flirty handful, and I'd had to remind her numerous times not to cross a line with me. But lately, she'd grown mellower, watched me when she thought I wasn't looking. Efficient, smart, good at handling people. She could have started her own PR company by now. She'd more than gotten her foot in the door. But she stuck around with me, fetching me shit and picking out clothes to wear for photo shoots.
one more reason to get through this tour. My heart belonged to Violet, only and forever. The attention of willing women was in ready supply on the road, but no matter how many after parties the band threw, I stayed away. I couldn't drink, and someone was sure to snap a photo that would put me in a compromising position and break Violet's heart. I was doing a good enough job of that on my own, thanks. I adjusted the strap around my neck and moved to the end of the corridor. The stage lay ahead, the crowd beyond. The lights went dark, and neon lights from 30,000 glow sticks swayed in an ocean of fans. 10 seconds, Evelyn murmured into her headset. She listened for the go-ahead from the show director, then gave my arm a gentle nudge. Go. I closed my eyes for a moment, as I did before every show. For you, Violet. Everything was for her. When I stepped on stage, I could love her. I could throw it into the universe and hope it would find her. And she would feel it. I just had to get through this tour, do some good in the world, and then be with her. And doing good was how I could be the kind of guy Violet deserved. There were a million ways to spend my life, but only one that mattered. I let the swelling thunder of the crowd fill me up. Their energy sustained me. Every night, I fed off of it and gave it back in my sweat and tears. I strode onto the stage, followed the tape marking my path in the dark to my mic stand, and then one lone green light fell over me. The stadium went crazy, an avalanche of sound. I closed my eyes and let it wash over me. Gratitude filled me up that so many people wanted to hear what I had to say, to let me bare my soul and tell my story every night on stage. Every night, another step closer to Violet. Wait for me. A slow burn kiss caught fire. I tasted the sun and you smiled, said, let's try together alone. We've both cried our last goodbye. You're calling my name. I'm calling you home. Wait for me. Wait for me. When the noise gets loud, put down the phone. I can't stand the sound no more. An empty bed and an endless road, drowning in the sea so cold. Please wait for me. Wait for me. People talk to me, but I fade. They all look the same, looking for you in somebody's face. Hard to love and hard to chase. I felt so high, I crashed to earth. Please wait for me while I search. When the noise gets loud, put down the phone. I can't stand the sound no more. An empty bed and an endless road, drowning in the sea so cold. Please wait for me. Wait for me. Every night it's the same old thing. You're my best friend in my dreams. I go to sleep and I think of you. When I wake up, it can't be true. Wait for me. Wait for me. I know that this can't be pretend. I'm here waiting till the end. One day I know it won't be hard. One day I know we'll feel so free. Baby, please, I'm asking you to wait for me. Wait for me. I stepped off the stage, drenched in sweat. The other guys were high-fiving and congratulating each other. Dan, the bassist, fell in step beside me in the corridor, the echoes of music and 20,000 screaming fans still reverberating in my ears.
"Hey man, great show," he said.
"Thanks, you too," my stock answer.
"Where did that last one come from?" Antonio, the keyboardist, asked. "Wait for me, it wasn't exactly on the set list."
"Yeah, sorry," I said. "It was something I wrote on the fly. Needed to get it out there."
"Beautiful shit, man."
"Thanks." His brows furrowed as he looked me up and down.
"You okay? You look a little white."
"I'm fine," I said, even as my watch started warning me that my numbers were dropping. Fuck, too high before the show, too low after.
"Hey, Miller.